Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Please explain unto me how the living beings are generated, how they are maintained, and how they are annihilated. Tell me also of the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service unto the Lord. What are the Vedic rituals and injunctions of the supplementary Vedic rites, and what are the procedures of religion, economic development, and sense satisfaction? So as I said, it's quite a lengthy purport. So let's see. Purport. Samplava, in the sense of perfect means, is employed to denote the discharging of devotional service. And pratisamplava means just the opposite, or that which destroys the progress of devotional service. One who is firmly situated in the devotional service of the Lord can very easily execute the functions of conditioned life. Living the conditional life is just like plying a boat in the middle of the ocean. One is completely at the mercy of the ocean, and at every moment there's every chance of being drowned in the ocean by slight agitation. If the atmosphere is all right, the boat can ply very easily, undoubtedly. But if there is some storm, fog, wind, or cloud, there's every possibility of being drowned in the ocean. No one can control the whims of the ocean. However, one may be materially well equipped. One who has crossed the oceans by ship may have sufficient experience of such dependence upon the mercy of the ocean. But one can ply over the ocean of material existence by the grace of the Lord very easily, without any fear of storm or fog. It all depends on the will of the Lord. No one can help if there is some unfortunate danger in the state of conditioned life. The devotees of the Lord, however, cross the ocean of material existence without anxiety, because a pure devotee is always protected by the Lord, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 9.13. The Lord gives special attention to His devotees in their activities with the material conditioned life, Bhagavad Gita 9.29. Therefore, everyone should take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and be a pure devotee of the Lord by all means. One should know, therefore, from the expert spiritual master, the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service. Just as Maharaj Parikshit asked his spiritual master, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, according to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the science of devotional service, one should not eat more than what he requires to maintain the body and soul together. Vegetable diets and milk are sufficient for maintenance of the human body, and therefore one has no need to eat anything more to satisfy the palate. One should also not accumulate money to become puffed up in the material world. One should earn his livelihood easily and honestly, for it is better to become a coolie for an honest livelihood than to become a great man in society by hook and crook. There is no harm if one becomes the richest man in the world by honest dealings, but one should not sacrifice the honest means of livelihood simply to accumulate wealth. Such an endeavor is harmful to devotional service. One should not talk nonsense. A devotee's business is to earn the favor of the Lord. Therefore, a devotee should always glorify the Lord in his wonderful creations. A devotee should not decry the creation of the Lord, defying him by saying that he has created a false world. The world is not false. Factually, we have to take so many things from the world for our maintenance. So how we can say that the world is false? Similarly, how can one think of the Lord as being without a form? How can one become formless and at the same time having all intelligence and consciousness, direct and indirect? So there are many things for a pure devotee to learn, and he should learn them perfectly from a bona fide personality like Shukadeva Goswami. The favorable conditions for discharging devotional service are that one should be very enthusiastic in serving the Lord. The Lord, in His form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wanted the cult of devotional service to the Lord to be preached all over the world, in every nook and corner. And therefore, a pure devotee's duty is to discharge his order as far as possible. Every devotee should be very enthusiastic, not only in performing his daily rituals of devotional service, but in trying to preach the cult peacefully by following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. If he is not superficially successful in such an attempt, he should not be deterred from the discharge of his duty. Success or failure has no meaning for a pure devotee, because he is a soldier in the field. Preaching the cult of devotional service is something like declaring war against materialistic life. There are different kinds of materialists, such as fruitive workers, the mental speculators, the mystic jugglers, and so many others. All of them are against the existence of Godhead. They will declare that they are themselves God, although in every step and in every action they are dependent on the mercy of the Lord. Therefore, a pure devotee may not associate with such gangs of atheists. A strong devotee of the Lord will not be misled by such atheistic propaganda of the non-devotees, but a neophyte devotee should be very cautious about them. A devotee should see to the right discharge of devotional service under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master and should not stick only to the formalities. Under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master, one should see how much service is being executed and not simply in the matter of rituals. A devotee should not hanker after anything, but he should be satisfied with things that may automatically come to him by the will of the Lord. That should be the principle of devotional life. And all these principles are easily learned under the guidance of a spiritual master like Shukadev Goswami. Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Shukadev correctly, and one should follow his example. Maharaj Parikshit inquired about the process of creation, maintenance, and destruction of material world, the process of Vedic rituals, and the method of executing pious activities in terms of the supplementary Vedas, like the Puranas and Mahabharat. As explained before, the Mahabharat is the history of ancient India, and so also are the Puranas. Pious acts are prescribed in the supplementary Vedas, the Smritis, which specifically mention digging tanks and wells for the water supply of the people in general, to plant trees on the public roads, to construct public temples and places of worship of God, to establish places of charity where the poor destitutes can be provided with foodstuff, and similar activities are called purta. Similarly, the process of fulfilling the natural desire for sense gratification was also inquired by the king for the benefit of all concerned. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakayam Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So yesterday I had a bit of time on my hands, so I was thinking, because it's pretty long topic, long purport, I was thinking putting a kind of a small presentation together. Can you see it? Is it visible? Okay. So there are four paragraphs in this purport by Prabhupada, and all of these four paragraphs have something interesting to kind of deliver or to bring. So in the first paragraph, Prabhupada was very much kind of presenting this analogy of a boat, right? And there was some interesting thing he said, at the mercy of the ocean. So this material world is considered to be like the material ocean, right? We try to kind of ply through with varieties of paraphernalias, personalities, or guidebooks, which will kind of help us to go through this ocean of birth and death. So Prabhupada mentions samplava versus pratisamplava. So correct me if I'm wrong, please. Plava means basically a boat, right? Plava. So samplava, Prabhupada refers to as something which is very good and very spiritually surcharged and good for spiritual life. Pratisamplava, on the opposite, is something which is not good for spiritual activities. One of the other points Prabhupada was using is that simply by slight agitation in our material life or in our material functioning, we can actually spiral down very easily. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there are interesting verses, right? 262 and 263. And this whole agitation can be kind of a... can be observed from the point of perspective of contemplation. So slight agitation. So what is agitation for one person or for one devotee can be actually a source of sort of a spiritual remembrance for another personality. And everything is based on correct contemplation. So there was this pastime, we discussed it in our Bhakti Shastri, that once there was, we mentioned this, there was a group of sannyasis with Prabhupada in the airport. And there was a very, very attractive young lady passing by. And all of these sannyasis, they look at the woman, and then they saw Prabhupada observing them, and straight away they put their heads down, kind of being ashamed. And Prabhupada said something really interesting and very strange. He said, "She's very beautiful, isn't she?" To the full room of sannyasis. And they've been shocked. They didn't know what to say. Prabhupada said, "If she is beautiful, imagine how Krishna must be beautiful." So what is agitation for one, for another devotee, for a pure devotee, it's an opportunity or possibility for glorifying the Supreme Lord. So next time when we are in a stressful or difficult situations, the most important thing is to kind of take a step back and just observe it from a different angle, from a different perspective. There was another point that pure devotee is always protected by the Lord. And this is mentioned in the verse 9:13. Translation goes, "O Sanaprita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible." So there are a few interesting things here. Protection, right? Ashram as such means shelter, means taking protection of something. So there are different shelters for different personalities based on their different psychophysical constitution and their sort of a spiritual consciousness or level of their consciousness. So those which are great souls, their protection is actually this: fully engage in devotional service. So there are different degrees or different levels, different layers to how much and with what kind of intensity we take shelter of active devotional service. You can perform different forms of devotional service. You can be seemingly very close on the altar to the deities. You can be dressing, you can be cooking, you can be doing this and that. But the question is, where is your consciousness? There was this once I overheard an interesting conversation between Gadadhar Prabhu and now Keshav Maharaj. And Keshav Maharaj was saying, "Gadadhar Prabhu, you are a very close associate of the Lord." And Gadadhar Prabhu responded, "Maybe in proximity, but you are a great devotee of the Lord in actually engaging in the desired activities which the Lord desires." So the question is, what is a real proximity? What does it mean to be kind of a truly close associate of the Lord? There were instances when Prabhupada was traveling, I think, correct me, in Mayapur or somewhere in Vrindavan, and he was criticized by his godbrothers, "Why you don't go to the samadhi of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj? Why you don't go there to pay obeisances to your spiritual master?" And Prabhupada was shocked by the by being told like this. And Prabhupada responded, well, basically, I'm always in proximity of my spiritual master. All the time, all the activities, every single step I take, every single managerial meeting, every deity installation, every initiation, every word, every sentence, and every time I meditate on books, I'm trying to be closely connected to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. So what is the true proximity? The proximity means to be constantly engaged in the right consciousness in devotional service. And this is the best way to kind of go over the ocean of material miseries. So we are at the mercy of the ocean, but when you understand who blows the wind of the ocean, who makes the waves of the ocean, and if you understand that person behind the scene, then we are sheltered. So that was kind of a first point on the first topic which Prabhupada mentioned. The paragraph number 2 was very interesting. There was a lot of don'ts and what you should do and what you shouldn't do. So this reminds me of one very interesting verse from Nectar of Instruction. There was a lot of emphasis, Prabhupada emphasized, how we should actually develop a relationship with the spiritual master, how we should always be inquisitive, and how we should always ask questions and asking and begging for guidance from the spiritual master. And there were some questions we Prabhupada raised. You see, sometimes for us as practicing devotees, we don't actually see the importance and the necessities of personal form or personal features of the Lord. The personal feature of the Lord. The reason why I'm saying this is because so many people outside in the material world, they're actually nirvisheshas or shunyavadis. They are not interested in personal feature of the Lord. Even when they speak great flowery words about God, they never describe Him as a person. So underlying consciousness of the society is that they are all sort of either mayavadis or not interested in God at all, or even if they're interested in God, they don't understand Him as a person. So when you read Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, you can see how Prabhupada emphasized this again and again and again. And for years, I haven't really paid much attention to it, that whole impersonal feature. But now, when you go on Sankirtan, when you go book distribution, when you speak with people, you actually see how they are impersonalists. And how is it so crucial for us to emphasize the personal aspect of the Lord for their benefit and for our benefit as well. So Prabhupada raises a few questions here. How can one think of the Lord as being without a form? We are made on the image of God. And I always like to ask, like when you go to heaven, what are you going to do there? What is the activity you're going to perform? How are you going to relate to God? Are you going to be playing flutes and you know, how do you say, trumpets, and just God is sitting on a big throne and with a big beard? What are you going to be actually doing at the destination you desire to go? And usually people are speechless. They can't really answer. Who is God? How does He look like? I want to meditate on the Father. Can you describe Him to me? Usually it's not possible. So another aspect of this specific section was that Prabhupada make really important and very interesting points, which very much reminded me of the Nectar of Instruction, the second verse. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following 6 activities: eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters, practicing the spiritual rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically, associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness, and being greedy for mundane achievements. So there's one mantra which I kind of over the years tried to emphasize or kind of just like to speak about. And the mantra is from subtle to gross. It's something which goes through everything in Bhagavatam. It goes through all of our spiritual life. It pervades all the interactions that we have. It explains all of our desires, all that we desire and try to achieve, material or spiritual. This one simple mantra, from subtle to gross. So let's take a few of them for example. Associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. When we do this specific activity, what is the subtlety behind? What would you say? What would be your take on? If someone asks you a question, why are you associating with full honesty with worldly-minded people which are not interested in Krishna consciousness, not for the sake of preaching? Why do you do that? Sorry?
Sense enjoyment.
Sense enjoyment. Okay, what kind of sense enjoyment?
Going to cinema,
watching movies. But what is the subtlety behind it? What is the reason that we actually do this activity?
We want to enjoy.
So the soul is naturally pleasure-seeking and always seeks for enjoyment. But the reason why we seek the enjoyment out of Krishna consciousness is because we haven't developed higher taste in Krishna consciousness. Right? When you study, when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, when you associate with devotees, when you chant your rounds properly, when you do your service with right consciousness, there's so much pleasure inside of those activities. How many of you, like when you chant those rounds, those extra special rounds, you feel like your heart is just going to explode internally. You feel like it's going to jump out of your chest. You feel like there's nothing else this material world can actually offer which can come closer to this feeling. But the reason why we seek these things outside of Krishna consciousness is because naturally we are pleasure seeking and we just need to have that pleasure, either here or there. Another one, over endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. Again, how would you apply this mantra from subtle to gross? Over endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. What is the subtlety behind this? Any takes?
Pride.
Would you elaborate on that? Can we have a mic? Okay, I will repeat it for the... The achievement will bring you some fame. Okay. Any other takes? Thank you.
No, we don't realize that Krishna is visible for our pleasure. Mm-hmm. If we associate with Krishna, then if we become more simple, actually we'd be happier.
Mm-hmm. So if you associate more with Krishna, we can actually become more simple and more happier. Yes. Over endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. Sometimes it's actually also a matter of faith, having Shraddha, that everything which due to come will come in the right time. Everything which is given to us or everything which comes on its own accord is somehow or another our quota. But the question is, do we accept our quota or do we accept what is due to come? Do we have faith that this is the right amount which I need for my personal satisfaction, for my personal well-being? So this whole stanza or this whole section of Srila Prabhupada's purport basically indicates that do we have faith in the process? Do we have faith that everything which is correct and has to come and which is coming to us is ordained by the Lord and by the providence or by the karmic activities? And do we contemplate upon them as correctly as we should? That one should know this. That was the whole sort of what I understood from Prabhupada's section of this verse. The third paragraph I saw very much as a preaching paragraph, where Prabhupada is really emphasizing the mood of Harinam Sankirtan and also going beyond the ritualistic performance of your day-to-day activities. Not only in performing his daily rituals of devotional service, but in trying to preach the cult peacefully. And this is a very interesting thing. Krishna consciousness is whatever actually you wanted it to be. Whichever level and layer of what you want to grasp and take out of it, to whichever degree you want to squeeze the orange, that's how much will come out of it. to whichever degree you study and read the Shastras, to that degree they will reveal themselves to you. To whichever degree you reciprocate with the Lord, through that degree the Lord will reciprocate with you. So yes, you can do your daily rituals. You can bow down to the devotees. But are you truly bowing down, or is it just a mechanical activity? Are you chanting your rounds as a mechanical thing? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Or are we truly tapping ourselves to the deep root of the meaning of the mantra? Have we truly meditate on the meanings? Are we truly meditating? What does it mean to actually chant? Right? It's a begging, it's asking for service. And then when the service comes, we reject it. So do we have a correct contemplation? Or are we mechanically chanting because it somehow gets the... Sometimes we come into Krishna consciousness many times damaged. And when we practice Krishna consciousness, somehow that damage becomes mitigated. And then we become somehow satisfied with that mitigation of that damage from our previous lives. But can we go beyond that? Another interesting point which was mentioned by Prabhupada was saying success or failure has no meaning for a pure devotee because he is a soldier in the field. Soldier in the field. Success or failure has no meaning. And this is very interesting. It invites something much, much more deeper than just theory. And this is one of the reasons why I really actually enjoy book distribution and Sankirtan. Because on Sankirtan, there are days when you're full successful, very successful. There are days when Lakshmi is coming, people are just grabbing the books. People are just like so responsive. The weather is beautiful. People are so nice and kind and everything goes perfectly well. But then there are days when everything is seemingly a failure. Everything is seemingly just so difficult. There's rain, no one is stopping, people are rude to you. Nothing's going well. But the thing is, no meaning for a pure devotee because he's a soldier in the field. So, because we perform the devotional activity itself, and Krishna, somehow or another, he wants to, and as bad as it may sound, he wants to break you. He wants to break this false consciousness of aham mameti, I and mine. And what does this mean? For a preacher, it means that you still perform the activity, but you're not depending on the results of the activity. You've done the yajna, you've done the offerings, you do your duty out of love, out of compassion, out of whatever you desire to offer to Guru Gauranga, to Krishna. But you're not requesting the results. Obviously, the results are always nice when they come, but the true challenge is when they don't come. Are you ready to continue when nothing will happen? So that's the real test. And this can be majority times seen in the preaching field. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki. Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Shri Shri Gornitai ki. So I would say that in preaching field of Krishna consciousness, these theories of the Bhagavad Gita, this jnana of the Bhagavad Gita can become vigyan in the preaching field more than anywhere else. I dare to say. So success or failure has no meaning for a pure devotee because he's a soldier in the field. So there are a few points to consider there. So this was a bit of a timeline or kind of a small little evolution of the purport which Prabhupada was kind of emphasizing or presenting. First, in the beginning, he asked the question, what is that which carries us? Who is that which carries us? Who's the favorable wind? Who is the one who's sent, showing the direction? Who is the one with experiences of how to control, you know, the boat on the ocean of repeated birth and death? Then on the second part, or second paragraph, the act of balance. We are living still in a material world, and to certain degrees we have material consciousness. But the important thing is to understand the yama and niyama. To which degree, what to reject, and what to accept according to time, place, and circumstances. And that really, really requires A lot of tranquility, knowledge, wisdom, and practical application of the wisdom of Krishna consciousness. The third paragraph was the importance of preaching. How actually in the preaching field, the devotee can truly apply all the wisdom of the Vedas. In the act of sharing Krishna consciousness, you yourself become more wholesome devotee. And in the fourth paragraph, which comes, Srila Prabhupada basically says that by performing all these other activities, the piety will naturally arrive. When you understand the conclusion of the Vedas, naturally all the side effects of the Vedas will just naturally come. When people become Krishna conscious, there will be no slaughterhouses. When people become Krishna conscious, there will be no need for any sort of a political disputes amongst different countries. One thing which I like to say is that these books, they can end up racism. These books, they can end up, you know, political disputes. These books, they can end up harassments, sexual deviations. These books can help people to be more holistically happy. These books, they can create an environment where people become just naturally satisfied. And piety will naturally follow as a side effect. Not as a principal, sort of a core of following. We don't want to be pious people. Our goal is not to be pious. Our goal is not to be good. Our goal is to be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada even emphasized that we are not vegetarians. We take what Krishna accepts. And Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam. So we do that. Prabhupada even goes to a distance to, he says, if Krishna desires, I want chicken, we will kill them all. Right? Paraphrasing. If Krishna desires meat, we will slaughter and butcher everything. Obviously, Krishna doesn't. So that only shows that we are not vegetarians, or we are not peaceful, or we are not after good, pious things. All of them come as a side effect of us being Krishna conscious. So next time when you go on book distribution or you preach, and people ask you, you know, what is the goal of your movement? You can say to know Krishna and to please Krishna. And everything else is a side product of that activity itself. So that's the goal of Krishna consciousness. But we have to be bold enough to present the personal feature of the Lord and really drill it into the consciousness of the society that God is a person and we have relationship with Him. So I'll finish here. Those are these sort of four paragraphs or four points, four topics which we discussed. And if there are any points, any questions, anything devotees would like to share, please, we still have 10 minutes or something. So let's fill it up with some reflections or questions, please. Yes? No questions? No points? You have a question? Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. Turn it on. Is it on?
Supposedly, yes. Okay. Yeah, it's on. I was just curious about the subtle basis of the other points mentioned there in the verse. Like, for example, what is the subtlety of prajalpa? You know, nonsense talk. What
is the subtlety of prajalpa? That's an interesting point. Basically, again, the nature of living beings to always... You see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur once, he made this very nice presentation or this very nice sort of essay. And he said, what are the three aspects of the mind? Thinking, feeling, and willing, right? But then he said that this mind aspect, thinking, feeling, and willing, is actually just perverted reflection of the soul. Actually, the soul in its natural constitution constantly thinks, feels, and wills. So when we speak, when we discuss, it either has two angles. Either we take into the spiritual foundation when we think and feel and will and express ourselves on a spiritual platform, or we think, feel, and will and present ourselves on a material platform. So the subtle to gross is that we constantly have to have this, something has to come out. Some desires to hear and present is always there. The mind is constantly active. The mind constantly feels, wills, thinking, feeling, and willing. But the question is again, is it material or is it spiritual? So prajalpa is just a decision of individuals to present themselves. It's that desire. The subtlety is that we have desire to present ourselves. We have a desire to either glorify something or someone or associate with someone or something. But the question is again, is it spiritual desire or is it material desire? But that sort of something has to come out is always there. So prajalpa is just an indicator of what is the desire and need of association or for the soul or for the individual being. Is it spiritual need or is it material need? Yeah. Hare Krishna. Afterwards.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for the nice class, Prabhu. I actually would have one or two questions, but let's see how much time there is. Just a small question which I had based on your point of that mantra, subtle to gross. I was just thinking that sometimes changing the subtle can be quite challenging. And I think even if we look into things like in psychology, they say that the thoughts lead to emotions and then to behavior. But I think changing the subtle sometimes is very difficult. So then it makes more sense to change the gross, and that will have an impact on the subtle as well. Is that correct?
Yes, that's a basically very good format. But even that changing of gross, it's an internal desire to change something and you're utilizing as a tool, right? So for instance, internally, I remember in beginning days of me starting Krishna consciousness, I had the desire to sort of, somehow had devotional inclinations. And that internal desire came to a surface, like I decided, let me wear devotional clothes. And those devotional clothes helped me to go more internally. So it's always from subtle to gross. But we may manifest that gross can help us to go from gross to subtle. But ultimately, everything starts within the desire, right? Actually, they said the soul is not doing anything. It just desires. It is just a desire which the soul can do. Everything else is carrying by the three modes of material nature.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. But I assume still the gross can also bring about a change in the subtle, right? So for example, if some people get association with devotees, then somehow the desire can manifest, all right?
I guess yeah, but again, even that they can associate with devotees is a desire of a devotee to give association. If the devotee says, well, I will just stay here and don't have a desire to, perform Harinam Sankirtan, then that other person will not have the chance to actually even develop that desire. So again, everything comes from subtle to gross. It's a desire of Vaishnavas that we are Vaishnavas. It's not that it's just our desire, it's desire of others that we are Vaishnavas. It's a desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to instruct Srila Prabhupada to come to West and preach Krishna consciousness. It's a desire from desire to gross. I mean, from subtle to gross, I would say.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I would have Vaishnav, you said some questions.
Question, but ask, like.
Hare Gopal Prabhu. Thank you so much for the class. This is more of a reflection today. It's interesting that Prabhupada comments on the first two verses, Samplava, and which you mentioned, and Pratisankrama. Those he translated them into denoting devotional service, because in the word by word it says the Samplava, the perfect means of, I guess, or complete devastation, and then Pratisankrama is ultimate destruction. So he's kind of like saying if we don't execute this devotional service, like it's actually destructive, it's the ultimate destruction of a human being if they become completely degraded and do all these things.
Mm.
And then he goes on in the second, well, I really loved how you just mapped out like four sections. And the second section, he goes into saying, you know, all these kind of details of devotional service, like why are we executing them? And I was wondering when you were speaking, you know, what are the connection of these things that he's talking about? He leads from one thing to another and then to another in a surprising way. It's like, what is Prabhupada's underlying kind of logic to mention them? And I'm only offering like a small point that I could probably perceive is that essentially he's saying, he's assuring us that devotional service will supply you with all that you need. You need to have faith. And then he's saying that actually to execute with faith these things is actually what is supplementing you with this boat. So if you don't do all these things, actually, you're not going to be sustained. You're going to keep falling, and then you're going to keep meeting destruction on a smaller scale for devotees, I suppose. But it's just the danger of actually not being aware of the importance of instruction.
Mm.
So I thought it was quite interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, analyzing Srila Prabhupada's purport is just such a joyful thing. Prabhupada many times said that I'm not writing these purports, it's actually Krishna dictating it to me. So when you go through them, when you dissect them, when you see different angles, the way they present, the way he's unfolding certain points, it's just like it's like complete masterpiece. Like Prabhupada is just unbelievable in his purports. It just makes so much sense. And it's a very nice adventure actually to study Prabhupada's books. It's not something which is should be done mechanically, right? Like for instance within this timeline. It's not something which should be done mechanically, but something which Prabhupada put a lot of effort, a lot of faith, a lot of wisdom. Yeah, and same time, this is Krishna speaking to us. So yeah, thank you for that point, Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. Prabhu, I was just looking at the second sentence in the translation where it says that tell me also of the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service unto the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So now my question is that, you know, as devotees we are always talking about the advantages of discharging devotional service, like it's the highest form, it's auspicious, but then I'm just thinking, what does it mean by disadvantages?
Disadvantages, yeah.
Oh, is it?
Can you tell me? I don't know.
I really don't know myself, yeah, because it's such a beautiful process. We all know by experience that that there cannot be anything better than this.
Mm.
So I'm also thinking that why Parikshit Maharaj is asking about the disadvantages when it is the highest form of worship.
So we can wait for Shukadev Goswami to answer that. That will be later on. And it would be nice actually to trace that specific verse or that specific answer by Shukadev Goswami to this specific question. That could be someone's homework if anyone wants to do that. Bhagavad Gita 8.16 answers that question. From the highest planet to the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death takes place. But one who attains Mayaboda, son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Wonderful. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Nitagora Premanande Haribo. Sorry, there was another question? Just a comment. Can we have quickly the comment? And sorry for neglecting that.
Thank you, Anta.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the nice class. You know, somebody was asking about Prajalpa.
Mm.
So in the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada is saying that that Prajalpa is like the frog that's croaking inviting the snake of death. You know, when the frog is croaking, the snake can hear where the frog is, and then it's coming. Then he swallows the frog of the frog. So it's basically like mundane sound vibration. Basically, it's attracting death. And I think in the second canto, there's a verse that explains those who utilize their time and their activities and the sound vibration for glorifying the Lord, for them the rising and setting of the sun doesn't take away their duration of life, whereas the others it definitely does. Yeah. So prajalpa is like, you know, it's dangerous spiritually speaking. Mm. Hare Krishna.
Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Hare Krishna.